Hey friends, welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about the ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring the relationship between content and the devices that you're reading the content on. Joining me for this conversation is the wonderful Garrett Sussman, who's recently joined the team over at iPollRank as the demand generation manager. Welcome to the show, Garrett.
Thank you for having me, Amanda. I'm so excited to chat with you about this.
Me too. I was recently on his podcast. What was it, a few weeks, months? I don't know. Time's not a thing anymore. Ago. And really enjoyed that conversation. So I'm excited we get to continue it about more tactical type of stuff. So just to get the conversation going, why do you think it's important to understand how people are consuming the content, like where they're consuming it, what devices they're consuming it on? Why does that matter?
It's so interesting because so many more people, and this has been happening, you know, iPhone comes out in 2008, and so many people use their phones to consume content, to read it. All, like almost all of social media is on your phone these days. Mm-hmm. And if you're not conscious about what that content experience is like on your phone, it can be awful, especially depending on the audience. You know, if you're working like with really small font sizes or, you know, really hard to click elements or things are literally falling off of the device, that's not a great experience. And one thing that I've realized recently is, you know, in the SEO world, everyone's obsessed with the page experience update, right? They're obsessed with how quickly your content loads on your website, you know, how quickly, you know, you can, you know, jump through the different elements of it. And that's a good positive experience because Google says that that's going to impact your rankings. Now, everyone's focused on this page experience update, and yet flowing under the radar is this mobile-only indexing update that's coming. Our founder, Mike King, kind of was focusing on it back in March. And, you know, we basically, Google said that they were going to roll something out around, you know, April, May. Nothing's happened. But this idea is that the way Google determines how to rank your content is based historically on both what's on the mobile version of your site and the desktop version of your site. With this mobile only indexing update, it's like it sounds, they're only going to index what's on the mobile version of your site. And the really interesting thing that Mike found was if you look at a variety of larger websites, what's on your mobile site and what's on your desktop site doesn't match. There's no parity there. And one of the most interesting factors that he found was only 16% of pages had the same word count on mobile and desktop. So, you know, if you have like this really great, beautifully built out desktop website, and it has all this great content that, you know, is easily surfaceable, you can find, jump from place to place, but it's not on your phone, when Google rolls out this update, all of a sudden your rankings are gonna take a hit because Google's not gonna index that content.
Wow. Yeah, the 16% fact, I think I looked at the report when we were talking before this, and that kind of blew me away too. So I kind of want to ask, I feel like there's different categories of ways to mobile optimize. Like you'd mentioned font size is one. And I feel like some of them are on the creator's plate, like the writer, like the content marketer can make those changes themselves. And then some things kind of fall to the dev team and such, right? Can you give examples of kind of like both buckets that people should be thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that when it comes to, I mean, most is on the dev side, I think. I think that's the biggest focus, first of all, because any sort of themes that are built out for your website, whether you're using responsive or mobile specific kind of frameworks, that's going to fundamentally impact how your content appears. But in terms of the actual content, just thinking about using jump links, right? Internal anchors, you know, in making sure that your links are easily visible and identifiable, that they can click to different parts of your site, that it doesn't throw you off, that the menus are, you know, well-defined and easy to find. And then making sure for the content creators, imagery, right? Like, how does it look? It's really important to test. And there's so many tools that you can use, even, you know, just Chrome dev tools of being able to see your site in a mobile version, because, you know, the way it looks on an iPhone versus an Android versus a Pro versus a tablet, they all look, you know, different. And I don't know about you. I don't have like 15 million devices to be able to just like break out and look at. So you got to use those tools like the Chrome Web Dev Tools to be able to, you know, see what your content looks like on those sites, and then make informed decisions about whether or not that's going to be a good experience for your audience.
And I assume you should also be looking at your Google Analytics to see where people are even trying to consume your content. You know, like when I look at Fractal, most people are on desktop, right? Just because it's, you're not typically browsing for agencies on your phone. There are people who do, just not the majority. And that probably plays into how much you're prioritizing this stuff.
Oh, a big time. I mean, I came from the SaaS world. And so most SaaS companies, when people are doing their research on, you know, a SaaS product to buy, they're doing it on their desktop. But when you start thinking about like local businesses, mm-hmm. almost everything local has, you know, local intent. And when people have local intent, most likely they're on their phones, right? Like they are, you know, looking for a restaurant near me, a dentist near me, you know, retail store near me. And so they're going to be looking on their phone there. E-commerce, you know, so the way product pages operate and making things like a size is huge. Size is huge. I don't know, like if you're on, you know, the Amazon app, you know, obviously that's not a website, but if you're on the app, you can see everything is very easy to use on your phone. If you have an e-commerce store or Shopify, like, you know, whatever, WooCommerce, whatever you're using, making sure that everything can be purchased, that's going to impact your conversion rate. So e-commerce, you need to think about, you know, local intent, you need to think about, and then just generally more and more people, like any media publication, needs to focus on their devices, because just in the last year with the whole pandemic, you know, despite everyone being at home, more and more people are still consuming content on their phones. Like, you know, the multi-screen consumption of content where you're in front of your television, but you're still like checking your phone. Like,
it's relatable.
Right. And you're on Twitter and you click a link, or you're on Facebook and you go to read an article from that device. That's all going to be on your phone. So I think you make a great point, which is you can check in Google Analytics what part of your websites, what specific pages are being read by which devices, and make sure that you're working accordingly and optimizing accordingly.
So when you saw this, or when Mike King saw those discrepancies happening, was that mostly a result of just the bad templates, you know, on the dev side that's like cutting the word count out? Like what are the major offenders here that are causing these issues?
Well, I think especially, so we work with a lot of enterprise brands. So the more complex and custom built sites, the larger they get, the, you know, some of the legacy elements that weren't taken into consideration 5, 7, 10 years ago still exist and were never addressed. And now they're becoming an issue. So it's like, you know, if you're thinking, you know, in 2009 and you're building out your mobile site, and it would be ugly to include, you know, the 50 different links on your footer. So, you know, we're only going to include, you know, the most important 10 links on your footer and just ignore the desktop stuff and hide it from Google. Now, all of a sudden, that's an issue. You know, now all of a sudden, when you depended on ranking for, you know, all of those internal links that were appearing on the desktop version of your site, and now, you know, they don't exist on the mobile version, that's going to be a culprit. So I would say if you have any type of legacy website, you need to go back, dig into the guts of the technical, dig into the content, look at all those internal links of the footer, of your, you know, header navigation, and see what exists on one place but doesn't exist on another.
Yeah. for, especially for bigger sites like that, I've heard SEOs and content folks saying it could be an interesting situation to when talking with devs and like getting things prioritized. So what advice would you give to people? Would you say that of all the things that could be coming up, that this is a priority because of mobile first indexing? Like what are people facing right now? What's the urgency level?
Well, it was really interesting to me in terms of how during the pandemic, a lot of marketing teams and dev teams' priorities shifted to SEO. You know, they were thinking more long-term as user behavior changed. And, you know, initially when people didn't know what was happening, some of them pulled back on ad spend, and that's why ads became cheaper. And now we're all going back into it where, you know, we're investing heavily in ads, heavily investing in content. But during that SEO content, I think that organizationally, people became more aware of the value of SEO. And so it's important to present it in that context and always in the context of the business KPI. So revenue, growth, new customers. And so if your website traffic depends on organic search, and all of a sudden that can be taken away from you dramatically because of this new mobile index only indexing, that's almost a red flag. You can sound the alarm to your C-suite, to your executive team, and to the dev team. Because I think, you know, when you're losing a major source of traffic like that, that impacts everybody. So on the C-suite aspect, you know, tying it to revenue, you should always be friends with your dev team. You know, like you always want to be developing relationships with your dev team. I think Orit Musnick, who recently left, I forget where she was at, but she joined DataCamp recently, and she talks a lot about developing relationships with your devs. It's not only when you need something, it's like these are your coworkers, your employees, they're all great people. And SEO isn't always their priority. So having an ongoing relationship with them so that you can help communicate to them that this needs to be a priority, that it's gonna impact the whole organization.
And it sounds like in this similar vein, it makes sense to start with your money pages and kind of work your way back. Does that sound right?
Yeah, absolutely. Or like if you're thinking e-commerce, like any of your product pages, like you could have a huge corpus of, you know, money pages being like any top sellers and work down, you know, in that capacity. But yeah, you're going to want to make sure that those are optimized and ready to go, because if those get hit, you know, that hurts. Also, a lot of times, sometimes those bottom of the funnel pages actually get less traffic. You know, like as content marketers, we a lot of times get a lot of our traffic from that top of a funnel awareness, because that's where most of the people are searching. You don't see a ton of people searching for, you know, case studies of agencies or case studies of, you know, this, you know, dentist? Why am I going? But you know, like the bottom of the funnel is going to be a lower traffic search volume, but it is really important.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all really important perspective to have, especially for the dev side of things and understanding how the frameworks can impact the way people are probably bouncing from your content if it's that bad. So from the content perspective, you mentioned some really good tips in general for mobile optimization. You mentioned the anchor links, you mentioned font size. How else should content folks be changing their strategies or thinking forward and adapting to mobile first? What else do they need to consider?
Well, even outside of the indexing considerations, I think we do need to think about the recent page experience updates. There is a temptation. A surprising amount of websites don't think about how their interstitials work on different devices, like the pop-ups. So, you know, for instance, you're used to going to a website, you start to leave, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's your offer to join your newsletter. There's your offer to sign up for a meeting or to, you know, get a promo coupon for whatever your awesome product is. In addition to that, you might have like your cookies notification at the bottom. You might have a chat bot set up. All of a sudden, if you do this on your mobile device and you haven't considered this, you literally have four different ads, pop-ups, modals all on top of each other. And it is just awful. I think we all just still have, you know, there's some sites where the content is so good and important to us, we like ignore all that stuff. But there's a good chance that you're not that type of site, or you're even hurting yourself from opportunities. So looking at your modals and pop-ups and seeing what they look like on your website, and if they're, you know, preventing your existing users from having a good experience, is a good audit process that you should always be going through.
Oh yeah. I mean, even if I'm a brand loyalist and I'm on the mobile having that experience, I'd probably be like, I'm not dealing with this. I'll deal with this later. And then maybe I forget. Like, you don't ever want to add that friction in for consumers.
It's I was talking about this recently with a colleague, but I'm a geeky comic book movie guy. Like, I love all the Marvel movies, and there's this one website I go to, and some of the publishers are still awful about this, where they have their ads all over the place, or, you know, they have their ads and there's like the cumulative shift situation where, you know, it loads so poorly, and you wonder if they do this on purpose to get you to click on an ad. But like, as it's loading, you're jumping to a part of the content, and the next thing you know, you go to click to read more and there's an ad there that you clicked on you didn't intend to. I really want to stop going to that site, but I can't help but getting like my comic movie fix. So I've still been going, but to your point, I'm like this close about bailing and being like, nope, you lost me.
What does that mean about a brand if you're like that loyal to them and even you're getting fed up? Like, why should this continue to be their course of action, you know?
Well, we're marketers too. I mean, it's like, I feel like we, you know, I pose this back to you. Do you think you're more likely to let like marketing websites slide because you know how difficult some of this stuff could be? Or are you like, no, you should know better. You're a marketer. you should know better than pull that on me.
It depends. Which I actually mean, because I feel like in some cases, if it's like a pop-up situation like we're talking about, that would tick me off. But in some cases, I'm more lenient when people like ask me to fill out surveys or they want to know what I heard about them. I'm like, I get it. I want to know the same thing. I will tell you exactly how I heard about your website. You know, those are the sort of things that I'm happy to help with, but that's an interesting point.
it's a reputation and an expectation thing too, right? Where it's like, you know, year after year, you have certain industries where like you don't expect them to have good experiences. And then, you know, as sites get better, as industries get better, then the expectations change. And so if you don't continue to move along with the trends in your industry and the device and content quality expectations, before you know it, it's going to be too late. You know, like I think about, you know, some of the publishers now of, you know, like when I'm reading the media, like the New York Times, or the Washington Post, like I'll go on these sites and I have a certain expectation for being able to read it online. Now, that doesn't even talk about the whole gated paywalls, which is a whole other conversation that's not part of the device related sort of thing. But I think that, you know, like in local, we were talking about earlier, I give them a little slack because I feel like most restaurants, most mom and pop local businesses, I don't expect their website to be well designed. But if it's bad enough, you know, where it's just the entire experience on mobile, it just doesn't meet that, I will bail. But, you know, look at what your competitors are doing. If you see a lot of competitors in your industry upping their game on these devices, you need to.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There is a lot more leniency for local businesses where you're like, they probably don't have a team of people working on this and this is what they can do. But you mentioned earlier in the interview, and it's something I want to emphasize, that it's not just a usability thing. It's not even that you're just losing people in that moment. It's like a reputation thing, like you said. If I don't have a good experience, like if I don't think you're putting your best foot forward in giving me this information, just slightly eroding my trust in everything else that you're doing. In the same way that you can say about like web design or any other way that you're presenting your brand and your information, anytime that's kind of botched, it's just kind of like pushes you a notch further down and whether I find you to be reliable, even if your information's great, right? Like it's a visual problem
Yeah, I absolutely. And the other consideration there, I'm 100% with you, is your audience, right? Like one thing we talk a lot about at IPOLRank is, you know, persona-driven SEO. And obviously, you know, if your audience like teenagers or millennials are going to have different expectations of their phone experience than, you know, someone, you know, 60 plus. Obviously, you know, even within those age demographics, there are specific personas of like, you know, native device, you know, technology users versus non-native. You know, maybe it's geographical, I don't know, but it's so important to understand your audience and what their expectations are. Like, I remember how interesting it was with Snapchat. Now, this is app and not website design, but like, it blew my mind when the part of the reason that Snapchat was so popular is because they didn't explain how it worked. Like, kids were really into just like figuring it out, finding, you know, tricks online, and it wasn't intuitive. And that was like the charm of it. And that's something that, you know, being a, what I think I'm a geriatric millennial is the term that came out a few months ago. Like, I didn't enjoy that experience. I never really got into Snapchat for that reason. So, but it just goes back to this idea of persona-driven content, persona-driven SEO is really designing for the device experience, not only for the device, but for the audience.
So you mentioned gated content and said that's kind of a whole other conversation, but I would kind of want to touch on it because even though we're not talking about devices when we're talking about that, it still falls into how you're consuming the content effort that you have to put in to receive it. And I'm curious to get your feedback because I hear a lot of different things about this debate, whether to just put everything out there as accessibly as possible or trying to get people to take some kind of an action to access it. So what overall is your take?
Well, I think that it is tricky. I think this is one of those things where in the world of marketing, you need to experiment. I think that there are a lot of things that work, you know, that it depends. It works for one business, but doesn't work for another. I think in some ways, we live in a digital economy where there's a trade-off for data, for the privilege to do things for free. And I think, you know, there is this kind of like social contract there at this point. Maybe we'll see a backlash. But I think that if it ultimately delivers value for people and that's the exchange, then I am for gating content. And I think you still have responsibility to use it responsibly once you have that data. You know, just because someone has made that transaction with you does not give you the green light to abuse their inbox. And there will be penalties of that. And I guess that's kind of the balance that us as marketers walk. On the other side of it, I will say in the publishing media world, I'm all for gated content. I find it very frustrating in the sense of, you know, we're not used to paying for content. You know, you think about back in the 90s, 80s, 70s, where you buy magazines and you'd be okay with it. And you're like, okay, I'm paying for this. Then we got into the late 90s, 2000s, 2010s, where we're like, well, we're entitled, you know, we're going to give up this data, so we're not actually going to pay money. And now we're seeing media publishers moving more to the subscription model, and even in the creator economy, the subscription model. And I do think in that sense, we're starting to see a shift of gated content in the sense of paying for content, which I think is a great thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How does that potentially change content strategy for folks, like aside from the kind of the obvious, like and also aside from what you said, where you have to be providing value if you're going to be asking people to give over their email address or whatever it is, you know, where the theme of this interview is talking about how they're consuming information affects your strategy, is what else comes into play when you make that decision, maybe of I'm going to gate this, like what does that responsibility actually look like?
I think, you know, it's interesting. Kevin Indig recently wrote a article about, you know, how content and good quality content is becoming more and more expensive. And I think the gating content is tricky, and it makes a marketer's job harder because you now need two levels of content. You need your free corpus, your free library, and then you need the good stuff that's worth paying for. And I think it's a minefield for marketers to walk, because I think at least for the most part, our mindset has been, well, let's use the good stuff to get customers. Whereas, yeah, and there are a lot of people who still believe in that philosophy, who are like, let's not gate anything. Let's make everything available for a different type of business metric that we're pursuing, whether it's like, you know, buying this other product, this other course, this other service. I don't think there's a right answer. I think that everyone is figuring out. I think it depends on your resources, like how much you can invest in your own content and making good quality content. You know, you don't want to do anything. You don't want to build quantity at the expense of quality. So you need to know what your limits are and make really smart decisions about your investment in your own content.
Yeah. In a semi-related question, although this is going to sound like I'm going totally off track, but I just see all these things as fitting together in this type of conversation, which is, and we often think about this, owning your own content or giving it away for another publication or another website, right? Like, am I going to create something for my own blog, or am I going to pitch this so that it maybe gets more attention somewhere else, but I don't get the traffic? This is also an it depends sort of situation, but what is your insight there? How do you approach those types of
it's debates? I think it's two sides of the same coin. I think that's a great connection, just because that's the same issue that people have been thinking about, where part of developing content, aside from ultimately driving those bottom of the funnel conversions, is growth and awareness and the numbers game. Like, if I can get enough eyeballs on my brand, on my content, and bring them closer to home, then I need to convert like a smaller percentage to generate, you know, that sort of value. So I think for a business versus an individual like creator who's trying to monetize their content, they're completely different conversations. And I think your bandwidth is, you know, the resources are very different. It's always interesting when you are like trying to scale your own content, right? And there is that reputation conversation there. So I think for businesses, for growth focused businesses, a lot of it makes sense to get your voice out there with guest posts. I think there are also ways to collaborate that might take less time, like podcasting, like doing, you know, an email, doing a video, you know, presenting at a conference. Well, those are investments too. I'm not going to pretend you're preparing for one right now. And, you know, it's not something you can just like whip out. There's a lot of prep that goes into it. So, but the mediums matter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's fundamentally like, that's what's so interesting about this topic overall. Cause it's people talk about a piece of content, but my God, there are a lot of decisions that are made during the process of not just you're creating it with a certain audience in mind, but you're creating it with a certain, maybe you know that this audience is mostly mobile. You got to make sure to account for that. Are you going to gate it? Are you not going to gate it? Are you going to put it on your own, are you putting it on your own site? Or are you going to send it somewhere else? It's like all of these considerations that come into play. So it's just kind of fascinating. And we have gone the route at Fractal of doing a lot of guest posting. Like that's how we that was the kind of the model that we were using for ourselves, not for our clients necessarily. That varied, but you know, I market the agency and we wrote guest posts for years and found that really did generate our authority. And now we're kind of at the point where we're like, well, maybe we should also put some of this on our own website. You know, like we've been not investing as much on our own site. So that's why it's just top of mind for me, because it is very much a matter of looking at what your own pipeline kind of looks like. Okay, we have built authority and awareness. Now, how do we amplify that on our own website once they get there and see if we can improve on that?
It's so fascinating the way different agencies have approached you know, their lead gen or, you know, their strategies, you know, especially with so many of the boutique agencies where there is that thought leadership that drives a lot of, you know, clients reaching out. Whereas, you know, one agency that I really admire is Andy Crescentino over at Orbit Media, mm-hmm. like in terms of building out their own content and walking the walk is like, if you go and check them out on Semrush, it's like, what they've built and SEO driven and driving people to them is so good for an agency. And then you see other folks like Fractal or like here at iPullRank, like, you know, Mike is always doing conferences. We're both doing our podcast. You're presenting at conferences, like that sort of like leadership. And then just the webinar route, you know, being visible. It's hard to choose. And then there's always like the advertising option, you know, like, is that worth it to invest in? Is it worth it to do social advertising? Should you look at, what are they called? Rise at Seven over mm-hmm. in the UK is so socially driven. Like their whole agency has grown dramatically in the last year or two based on the social engagement of their employees. And that's a whole other type of content. There's so many different models. It really is fascinating when you start to like see what people are doing or, you know, Sear does a lot of their own events, right? Like they build out whole in-person events. So I think it's good to be reflective too, no matter what type of company outside of the agency world is just yeah. like trying these different channels, see what's working. And then nothing always works, right? Like you always have to be diversifying the channels that you're trying in tactics.
Yeah, I love that you just outlined that so well because it's such a great illustration of how it's never one size fits all. Like I could sit here and tell you what has worked really well for us and maybe that would work for you, but maybe something else would work even better, you know? It just,
yeah.
You mentioned it before, but testing is an important part of this, no matter what, if we're trying to figure out what's going to work best for mobile, or you're trying to figure out whether you're going to gate something, you're absolutely right. Testing is kind of the ultimate indicator of whether you should keep doing something. So Garrett, is there anything I missed, especially, you know, going back to the mobile desktop discussion, is there anything else that you think people need to know that they don't know?
I think, you know, the best thing that we discussed is really going to your own tools, taking a moment and seeing and taking a look under your own hood and seeing where you're at. I think we did a great job of discussing, you know, the relationship with the devs, how there is a lot of technical aspects to it. However, you know, content creators need to be aware of this. Something as simple as going to your own website on your phone and just looking at the experience, you know, even asking, you know, your audience what they think, if it's a good experience, depending on the device. There's a lot that you can do that isn't as big a lift, at least, you know, taking your head out of the ground and looking and being knowledgeable about where you stand is important because, like I said, the mobile only indexing hasn't rolled out yet. It's been delayed. And so it's one of those things that nobody's talking about yet and could potentially majorly impact a lot of sites and shake up the ranking. So I think it's not something that should be ignored.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you're ahead of the game and get on it.
Boom, boom.
Garrett, thank you so much. Something I ask everybody is knowing the objective of the show, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
Oh man, there are so many great people and you've had a lot of them on the show as well. So I feel like I'm going to rattle off like three people and you're going to be like, well, I already had that person. I already had that person. Hiba Amin, I think has been great. I love what Brendan Hufford is doing over at Active Campaign. He's fantastic. Ross Simmons, at Foundation, other agency guy when it comes to distribution is amazing. You had Chima Meje on here. She's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you ever like go the local route, there are a bunch of really great local folks, whether it's like Joy Hawkins or Mike Blumenthal. I think that's a whole other conversation that when we're just generally talking content and we're talking SEO, people forget about how different local is.
Thank you. Yeah, it's funny. I feel like somebody could listen to all these and have like the best Twitter list of all time of like all these amazing marketers that everybody has recommended. We're almost, I realized we've done two iterations of the show and we're approaching episode, if we're not already, I don't know which order we're going in for your episode, but 100 episodes.
Which oh my gosh, crazy. Congratulations.
Thanks. I'm like the first one I'm telling this to.
That's like, wow. They should throw, I hope the People Fractal, you know, your whole team, like Kristen and them all, like sending you like some champagne or soda, whatever you drink, and throwing some balloons. That is an achievement that should not be underestimated, because we know how much work goes into this podcast and you do a fantastic job. I really enjoy listening.
That's really nice of you to say, Garrett. I love your show too. It's always so fun talking to other podcasters. Like, they just get it. How much work goes into it. It has been such a pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for coming on the show to share your tips with us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast. I just love talking marketing, so geeking out.
Yeah, you'll just have to come back again.
Okay.
If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, rage about why Netflix and Hulu are constantly canceling shows too soon, this is a recent rant of mine, or anything else you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I am a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.